Welcome. We have a number of speakers here at today's press conference who are speakers who spoke at this morning's plenary and others who will speak this afternoon at the closing ceremony of the International AIDS Conference. My name is Ron McInnes. I work as Director of Policy and Programs at the International AIDS Society. The purpose of the press conference, of course, is to give you a chance to ask some questions of the plenary speakers and to hear some brief remarks from each of them. We will go in order to my right and go down to the end. And I want to introduce each speaker and ask them to say a couple of minutes about their theme, what they're going to speak to the conference delegates today. So I'd like first to introduce Dr. Pedro Kahn, who is the president of the International AIDS Society and international co-chair of AIDS 2008, and president and founder of Fundación Huésped in Buenos Aires, in Argentina. And Pedro Kahn is also leaving as president of the International AIDS Society this week, and I want to wish him a farewell.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning. Very briefly, my remarks would be, first, we are very pleased as Latin Americans that we show we can deliver a big and successful conference as this one. Second, one of my major takes out of this conference is that we have seen, as probably never before, the level of political commitments of high-ranked political leaders in regards to main issues like stigma and discrimination and naming the vulnerable populations by their name. Commercial sex workers, intravenous drug users, MSMs, etc. The third issue I would like to underscore is that we have learned more than ever that treatment and prevention are both sides of the same coin, not only because it's needed, but also because we have evidence that treatment is working as a prevention tool. And as much as we expand antiretroviral therapy coverage, the better we will be using this tool in a combination prevention package that should include circumcision where applicable, safer sex behavior, use of condoms, harm reduction, etc. The last thing I would like to underscore is that I hope that we are starting to put the nails in the coffin of the completely misleading idea that funding AIDS works against healthcare systems. Funding AIDS strengthens healthcare systems, and we have more than ever evidence about that. So this and other issues will be addressed in my closing speech. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Michelle Kazakstein, who is the Executive Director of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria. And previously, he served as France's Ambassador for HIV/AIDS and Communicable Diseases, and as the Director of the French National Agency for Research, which many of you know as ANRS.
thank you, Ron. Good morning, everyone. In my remarks, and I understand my remarks have been distributed to the press center, I'd first like to congratulate everyone in the conference for a marvelous, fantastic, energizing conference with 25,000 people, of whom I understand half have been attending an AIDS conference for the first time. And 5,000 of these 25,000 are or were Mexicans. I would like to congratulate everyone for keeping on the fight against HIV/AIDS. And then, looking to Vienna and to the next 2 years or 3 years, I will be briefly discussing four issues, four challenges, and actually they overlap with some of what Pedro said. The first is human rights, a dominant theme of this conference, and the key strategy for fighting AIDS. The second is science, and particularly building a new type of science that we call operational research, really the need to link, to better link science with implementation and science with policy. My third point would be going as a strong and fair partner in building the health system's agenda, together with fighting the three diseases, AIDS, TB, and malaria, and considering once for all that silly, shameful debate about vertical versus horizontal, age-specific money versus health system should be over. And the fourth and last challenge will be about sustainability, and particularly sustainability of funding, since so much remains to be done.
Our next speaker is representing the mayor of Mexico City, and we're so pleased to have him here. We would not have been able to have this conference without the people of Mexico City and the government of Mexico City. Armando Jawed is the Secretary of Health for the City of Mexico.
Muy buenos días a todas y a todos. A nombre del jefe de gobierno, licenciado Marcelo Ebrard Casaubon, les doy a ustedes la más cordial bienvenida y el agradecimiento por todo el apoyo que nos han brindado cada uno de ustedes. Al gobierno de la ciudad le es muy importante esta conferencia, es una distinción haber recibido en la Ciudad de México este tan importante evento que el día de hoy concluye, y que felicito a todos los organizadores, a todos los participantes por haber trabajado en este sentido, en un tema tan importante y vital para la humanidad. El gobierno del Distrito Federal está actuando ya en este sentido. Tenemos una clínica de atención de personas con VIH que está en la colonia Condesa. El jefe de gobierno ha instruido para que se empiece a construir una nueva clínica en una zona de la ciudad muy importante, en Iztapalapa, en donde hay más de 2 millones de habitantes en esa circunscripción, y que además tiene un movimiento migratorio muy, muy importante de migración y migración. Por supuesto que esta oportunidad nos ha puesto frente al relanzamiento del nuevo programa de prevención y control del VIH en la Ciudad de México. Las políticas generales son 5. Es el combate a la discriminación por género y condición o preferencia sexual, el acceso universal tanto a la prevención como a la atención y al acceso a los medicamentos, que es vital, el trabajo en detección oportuna. A partir de 10 días iniciaremos en todos nuestros centros de salud, 210 en la Ciudad de México, la detección oportuna a todas las mujeres embarazadas para hacerles la prueba rápida de VIH en la Ciudad de México. Participación social. Estamos convocando a todos los grupos y organizaciones no gubernamentales, científicos, institutos nacionales de salud, toda la ciencia, todos los que saben sobre el tema, a participar para afinar este programa y relanzarlo. Trabajando con las organizaciones en todo tipo y sobre todo en educación. El gobierno de la ciudad ha lanzado el libro sobre sexualidad en jóvenes. La única vacuna que hay actualmente se llama Educación Sexual y Prevención. Ahí es donde tenemos que meter todos los recursos para atacar este grave problema que tenemos. Y por supuesto, evaluar los resultados e ir modificando estrategias de acuerdo al comportamiento. Así que finalmente, agradecerles la oportunidad, porque esto relanza el nuevo programa para actuar. Estamos repartiendo 12 millones de condones en la Ciudad de México, pretendemos hacerlo de aquí a diciembre. El uso al condón, tener relaciones seguras, trabajar con las madres, trabajar con los niños, con los adultos mayores y cada uno de los grupos que son altamente vulnerables. Quisiera terminar comentando que al gobierno de la ciudad le tocó coordinar toda la atención médica para los participantes de la conferencia y de la aldea global. Atendimos 1.117 personas que presentaron algún problema, de ellos 359 mexicanos y 758 extranjeros, 4 pacientes graves. En fin, esta es una participación interesante. Las instituciones, y les agradecemos su participación, Estado Mayor Presidencial, Instituto Mexicano del Seguro Social, Cruz Roja y por supuesto la Secretaría de Salud Federal. Muchas gracias.
Next, our speaker is Bruno Spears, who you spoke at this morning's plenary. Bruno is a researcher living with HIV. He is currently president of ED, which is primarily non-government, or the primary non-government HIV organization in France. He is also a researcher at the French National Institute for Medical Research. The title of his plenary remarks this morning was HIV Prevention: What Have We Learned from the Community Experiences in Concentrated Epidemics?
Good morning. This morning my talk was focused on HIV prevention, and there were 3 areas in which I was exploring. The first area was HIV prevention fatigue and the need to renew our discourse, which is often pitching all-nothing approach, and to think about the concept of sexual risk reduction, such as the use of treatment for people living with HIV, which is a good example of sexual risk reduction, or circumcision, which is also another example of sexual risk reduction. The second topic of my talk was the need of diversifying HIV testing approaches and the interest of using community-based testing, not only to reach marginalized people who do not have access to tests, but also to give to people who are frequently exposed to HIV risk the possibility to have multiple tests each time they need it. And the third part of my talk was on HIV stigma. Stigma is still a very major factor which fuels the epidemic and which is a factor for people that prevent them from access to HIV tests, to use condoms. And there is scientific evidence for that now. And I have proposed a triple therapy against stigma by doing three actions. The first action is to give a context where it's possible to talk about HIV and to listen about HIV. The second aspect on this therapy is to improving laws and policies that should help people living with HIV and not combat people living with HIV. And the third action is doing prevention with people and not for people, and especially with people who take risk or people living with HIV.
Thank you. Our next speaker spoke as well at the plenary this morning, Edwin Cameron. Edwin is a Justice of the Supreme Court of Appeal of South Africa and author of the prize-winning memoir Witness to AIDS, published in 2005. He has been living with HIV since 1986 and has been on antiretroviral therapy since 1997. Mr. Cameron gave the keynote address at the 13th International AIDS Conference in Durban in the year 2000. The title of his plenary remarks this morning was The Criminal Statutes, Criminal Prosecutions, Help or Hindrance.
Thank you very much, Ron. The nub of my presentation was that while it seems there seems a certain logic in trying to inhibit HIV transmission by criminalizing it with HIV-specific statutes, and there seems a certain justice in prosecuting people who've exposed other people to HIV or transmitted the virus. In fact, these HIV-specific statutes and prosecutions are calamitous. They are counterproductive. They heighten stigma in the disease. They do not stop HIV transmission. They intrude on a very delicate and difficult area of human functioning, which is sexuality. And there's no evidence to support the use of these criminal statutes. The biggest thing about them and the biggest tragedy about them is that in Africa, where the greatest burden of the epidemic falls, where treatment is now becoming available even in resource-poor countries, not only my own country, South Africa, which is a middle-income country, but in the countries to the north of it, which are very poor countries, treatment is now a feasible option. But to treat people, you've got to test them. You've got to diagnose them. And most people in Africa with HIV don't know that they have HIV. So these laws, some of the laws are terrible. I explained their effects in the plenary. Some of them require someone who knows that he or she has HIV to tell in advance any sexual contact that they've got HIV. That indubitably is going to drive people away from testing. It's going to drive them away from diagnosis. It's going to heighten the epidemic. It increases stigma. And it means that people are literally going to die because they are going to run away from treatment, testing, care, and diagnostic and education facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Chekaya Jeremiah. who spoke this morning at the plenary. He is the Chief Research Officer at the Center for Respiratory Diseases Research at the Kenya Medical Research Institute. He is also Chair of the DOTS Expansion Working Group and Vice Chair of the Stop TB Partnership Coordinating Board. He is based at the Center for Respiratory Disease Research in Kenya. The title of his plenary remarks this morning was Confronting TB-HIV in the Era of Increasing Anti-TB Drug Resistance.
Thank you. What we wanted to pass across to the audience today was the fact that HIV-associated TB is a big problem. The figure we have is that about 11 million people are co-infected with both TB and HIV, and that every year something close to 700,000 people are diagnosed with both HIV and TB, and that about 200,000 of those people die. And the key thing is that there are many interventions that have been known to work against HIV-associated TB, but they have been left to a TB control program to push forward. HIV control programs have previously not been as active as they should be in the fight against HIV-associated TB. And basically what we wanted to bring across was the fact that HIV control programs need to take a little more responsibility in moving or reducing the burden of TB in people living with HIV. We also highlighted the issue of drug-resistant TB, specifically multi-drug-resistant TB and XDR-TB, which are very difficult forms of TB to treat. And the key message here is that we all need to do something to prevent the emergency or the spread of drug-resistant TB, which in the HIV prevalent settings, these forms of TB can spread very quickly in HIV-infected communities, and they tend to have devastating clinical effects. They tend to end fatally. So the issue is that all of us should take due process and do everything we can to reduce the burden, put into place good TB control programs so that HIV-infected people who develop TB can be treated in a place that is safe and they don't pick up forms of TB that are difficult to treat. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Luis Soto Ramirez. Dr. Ramirez is the local co-chair of the International AIDS Conference here in Mexico. He's head of the Molecular Virology Unit at the Instituto Nacional de Ciencias Médicas y Nutrición here in Mexico and coordinator of the Clinical Care Committee of CONACYTA. Luis?
Thank you, Ron. Obviously, for me, being the local co-chair is going to be a very exciting moment to close the conference, especially because of a conference that we could consider one of the best, if not the best, conference ever. I think that this is what an AIDS conference should accomplish. It's very important for us. I will talk a little bit about universal treatment, universal prevention, universal human action. And on the other hand, I was very much inspired by Bruno this morning, because if 96 Vancouver was the triple combination therapy conference, this will be the triple combination against stigma and discrimination, according to what he described. And I will describe the triple combination for prevention. So I think that this will be the second triple combinations conference. Finally, I will also thank our governments, the federal and the city government, for all the commitment for this conference, for all the commitment for the prevention and treatment of AIDS patients. But I will ask all and each one of us to continue pushing for better prices, for better prevention strategies, and for the participation of the community in public policy.
Thank you. Our next speaker, who also spoke at the plenary this morning, is Zonibel Woods. Zonibel is the program manager at Ford Foundation and a feminist advocate with more than 18 years of experience in the women's movement. She has extensive expertise with women's organizations and has worked on issues related to youth, human rights, sexual rights, reproductive health, and HIV and AIDS. She's a member of the non-governmental organization delegation to the UNAIDS Program Coordinating Board. The title of her plenary remarks this morning was Investing in Gender Equity, Why Women and Girls Matter in the AIDS Response.
Thanks, Ron. I think it's quite interesting that in my remarks I called for greater participation of women and more women at the table. Perhaps I should have also called for more women at press conferences, and I will do that next time. And I value my colleagues on the table, of course, but I think this is also a place where we need to have more women speaking out. In terms of my remarks, I focused on three very specific issues. One of them, or three priorities that I think could help us integrate better the work that is already happening in among other movements, the women's movement, and also with the HIV and AIDS movement. The first one has to do with confronting the crisis of violence against women and girls. The second one is a call to make sexual and reproductive health and rights a reality. And the third one has to do with investing in women's organizations so that they can effectively participate in decisions that affect their lives. And in this regard, I think we specifically have to make investments in organizations of women living with HIV. It is extremely important that they are able to mobilize at the country level, at the national level, and at the regional and global level so that they can actually participate in these kinds of debates and demand the kind of accountability that we all have spoken about this during this conference. I also, there wasn't enough time in my presentation to really speak much more about this, but I think, you know, when we talk about women, we really need to be very conscientious that women is not just one homogeneous group, that we have to have very specific interventions for female sex workers, for women who use drugs, for transgender women, for women prisoners, for older women, for young women. So I think that's something that is, I feel that it's really missing from our response, is to have a gender analysis when we look at concentrated epidemics, to really have a strong gender analysis and take all of these things that intersect with the lives of women into account. I'll just stop there. But I, you know, one, if I can add one more thing, we heard that increasingly there's some international organizations that feel rather hesitant to talk about the feminization of the epidemic. And many of us argue that the feminization of the epidemic is not just about the number of women who are infected, but also the women that bear the disproportionate burden of care. So whether it's in a concentrated epidemic or a generalized epidemic or we have women are the ones that are actually bearing the brunt of providing the health care, the support for the families, and so on. So I think we have to take a broader approach to looking at how we're investing in gender inequality, in programs that support women's empowerment in the broadest sense. So I'll just stop there.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Juan Jacobo Hernandez, who is the director of the NGO Colecto Sol here in Mexico. He has also worked around the world on HIV/AIDS planning, programming, and advocacy, and he will be representing the voice of the activist and advocacy communities here at the conference.
Thank you very much, Ron. I would just like to, from the point of view of the, as a community co-chair for the community program committee, have some highlights. Talk about the inheritance of the conference in Mexico and not let the commitments and the discourse stay in words. So we have, as Sonny rightly said at the in her speech, the work begins now that the conference ends.
So we have a commitment to do a follow-up of what politicians said, especially the President of Mexico. Another highlight is the very visible and invigorating presence of key populations in the conference as a whole, and very specifically in the Global Village. The issue of criminalization, as Justice Edwin Cameron addressed in his speech, is also something that we would like to highlight. And, stressing that meaningful participation and very active participation of women in this conference, making their voices heard loud and clear, the great presence of transgenders that are coming strong, the visibility, very high visibility of users of injecting drugs and youth and sexual commercial sex workers. So these are some of the things that we would like to stress. And also, again, referring to Zani Woods, not let the issue of women and children be a pending issue for the next conference. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next speaker is Carlos Garcia de Leon, who is part of the community program planning committee here at the International AIDS Conference, and did a lot of the local organizing of local NGOs, activists, and civil society in Mexico.
Thank you, Ron. I will talk a little bit about how communities were impacted by this conference in the local and the regional and in the global level. As it was mentioned a few minutes ago, many people has their first opportunity to participate in an international AIDS conference. So these opportunities for communities are the possibility to have better knowledge, experiences, to share some of their lessons learned, to improve their skills, and to have more and more contacts. So these kind of impacts are sometimes invaluable. Even this conference is so expensive, it mobilizes a huge amount of resources. Probably there are some issues that are related with the personal lives of the communities that we are going to highlight. Also, this conference re-energized the local activism. And I'm saying local, speaking not only from Mexico, also for Latin America and the Caribbean, because this was a very good opportunity for many community organizations, for people with HIV/AIDS, to share with others, to look other forms of activism, to learn from others and what are they doing, what are they learning, and what their challenges. Of course, as in many other conferences, people living with HIV/AIDS and other key populations, as Jacobo was saying, were part of the conference. But in this one, particularly, I felt that we were really part of the planning, implementation of the conference, and can be in all the three components of the program, the scientific, the community, and the leadership one. So people living with HIV/AIDS, like me, were really, really part of the conference, so I feel really happy with that. And finally, I will speak about the future challenges that we have, of course, globally and locally, because while we were closed in this conference, in the real world, stigma and discrimination continue happening outside. So we have a lot of commitments from that we hear from governments, from other key players, from important stakeholders, but we're not going to allow a weak response. So we're part of the response, so we're going to be committed of that, and we're going to talk about that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. As you see, we have a diverse range of speakers and subject areas. We'd like you to please introduce yourself, ask your question. If you have a question addressed to a specific speaker, please let us know. If you'd like the several members of the panel to address the question, then we will go from that route. And just raise your hand and I will try to call as fairly as possible. I think we'll take three questions and then responses. Let's start here, sir. In the blue? Yes.
Good morning. My name is Emilio Godoy from the news agency IPS. I would like to ask Mr. Khan, Mr. Kasachkin, and Mr. Hernandez the following questions. How has the community involving governments, international organizations and NGOs become during this conference? Is it stronger or is it weaker? And then how can this commitment be translated into specific actions in the political sphere, taking into account that in this level decisions are taken? Thank you.
Okay, and another question, the young man in the front row here.
Hello. I would like to address my question to Edwin Cameron. I'm Daniel Cazal, I'm 13 years old, working with HDN. My worry is that if a parent is put in jail because of HIV, what happens to the children? And what happens to the children born with HIV? Thank you.
Thank you. Gentleman here.
Sir, I have a question for Pedro Khan. So I'm Yaron Gula, a journalist with Time Magazine. Pedro, how much do you think a concern is the rising food prices on HIV populations? And in terms of a strategy to deal with it, do you think food handouts to HIV-positive people is a good tactic, or do you think it's better to stress on general structural changes that can keep food prices down for everybody? Thank you.
We ask the panel to respond.
Okay, the first question that was directed to me was if this conference strengthened or weakened the relationship between NGOs, communities and international organizations. I definitely think that we are more strongly united than before, because we have now a better mutual understanding of our respective responsibilities and about the common platform we have to play on. And second, how do we translate the commitments into actions? Well, this is also a joint effort. None of us, probably with the exception of Mr. Secretary of Health of the City of Mexico, are really implementers of the policy. But we can do a lot, and I will address this in my closing speech today. All the 25,000 people that gather here in Mexico are now to be held accountable in order to push their governments and push their policymakers to make it happen, what we discussed and agreed this week. The second question, it's really a very interesting one, and I thank you for that. We have been saying, I said that in my opening remarks, poverty is one of the driving forces of the epidemic. AIDS produces poverty because it reduces the health, the overall workforce. It limits people's capacity to work and to make the money in order to sustain their families. But also it plays the other way around. Poverty produces AIDS. If you look at the populations that are more affected, if you look at the overall map in the world, the poorest countries are the most affected. If you look at a given country, you will see that the areas in which you see more poverty, you will see more AIDS. This is applicable to Argentina, to Brazil, to the US, and to any country in the world. So the most vulnerable populations are more vulnerable by the epidemic. So my answer would be, yes, we need food for people with HIV, but basically we need better access to food for everyone. We don't want the kind of, and this is only my personal point of view, we don't want the positive discrimination for people living with HIV. We want that everybody has the right to have decent food, sanitation, access to water, education, housing, etc.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. I'll just make two points very briefly. The first is that inclusiveness of the civil society, the communities, together with government, is a unique feature of the AIDS movement. And it's a unique feature in global health, it's a unique feature in development. Now, how do we translate that concept from a practical perspective? Let me give two answers with a global fund perspective. One is that by having civil society a strong representation on what we call the country coordinating mechanisms, CCMs, which in each country design the programs that are submitted for funding as proposals to the Global Fund and have oversight over the programs. By having at least 40% representation of the civil society in the CCMs, I think we have been bringing civil society to an institutional level that we see in no other place in development. So again, AIDS is a leader here. And then, of course, in terms of funding, so far the Global Fund has committed $11 billion to grants in AIDS, TB and malaria, and 45% of those funds are going to the civil society.
Gracias, Emilio, por tu pregunta. I would like to respond regarding the first question. I was, as a part of the coordinating committee of the conference and as a part of the conference itself, I think that one way that I saw this improvement of involvement is that during discussions of the program and the activities of the conference, there was a lot of some kind of dissent sometimes, and there was a great will of most of the people sitting at the table to listen to this dissent and to come to agreements and to solutions that were in the benefit for the conference. So this made me very happy that we were able to solve these questions. And that is a practical way of seeing our involvement in a practical way in the conference. How can we implement what has happened in the conference? I can give you a couple of examples as well. We are in Mexico, we're having the opportunity to participate in round 9. And I think this is a very good opportunity to ground and put into practice what we have heard and learned in this conference. In my concern is that I think this is a great opportunity to strengthening community systems, which will mean that if we have better and stronger communities, we will respond in a better and more effective way to the epidemic. The second opportunity we have, at least in Mexico, is to try to defend the textbook on sexuality. There's been a struggle and a tension right now between the federal government and the local government. And I think this is an issue that has been addressed in the conference, and that we will have this commitment to strongly defend the textbook on sexuality. And the third is to continue this kind of partnership with the different stakeholders as we did during the conference committee work.
Thank you. Edwin Cameron, would you like to respond to the question posed to you?
Yes, thank you very much indeed for the questions. The question asked here about the effects within a family of criminalization of HIV. Well, I must start off by saying that any criminal law has an effect on a family. Unfortunately, if someone commits a criminal offense, it has a devastating effect on young people within the family. The point that the question highlights, and I'm very grateful for that, is that these criminal laws have an entirely inappropriate and unjustified effect, because they have a terrific impact for unjustified reasons. This isn't the justified intervention of the criminal law, it's unjustified, and here the consequences are not only tragic, but have no social or consequential justification. So thank you for the question.
Okay, let's take another round of questions. Yes, please. Hold on for the microphone, please.
Hi, Harriet Hirshhorn, freelance reporter. My question is really just very simple. It's about representation and gender. And I would like, actually, for the answer to come from one of the men on the panel and not the only woman. There are 11 of you there, and there's one woman. And I just want to ask about how do you see threading, how do you imagine in the future being able to thread through all women's issues, not sort of separating them out, but just having concerns of women, the fact, not just talking about the feminization of the epidemic, but just women in general, having that be a part of your perspective all the time, and not have it be something that's segregated out when we talk about women's issues or women's condition or the feminization of the epidemic. How do you imagine including gender issues in part and parcel of everything you do, including representation in a press conference like this? That's all.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Sir.
Buenos días. Soy Martín Takagi, soy reportero de Notimex. Quisiera preguntarles qué deja esta conferencia para el mundo. ¿Cuál es la aportación a la comunidad que se dedica a combatir el SIDA? ¿Qué es lo que deja y qué es lo que llevan los participantes de esta conferencia a sus países?
Hi, my name is Patricia Palma. I was just thinking during the whole conference, in a reflection as a journalist, we have been, luckily we have been seeing the different groups, like key groups, they have been called sexual workers, men who have sex with men, transgenders, any other. But I was always thinking, we had before the problem that from the informative point of view, that the epidemic was seen as something that is just tackling these groups, and then non, like the general public was just thinking that they were not, it was not their problem. And in a way, I'm happy that they were here visible, and on the other hand, as a writer, I have the concern of how to make the people get the message that this is, you know, we're trying to talk about not discrimination and not stigma, and it's sometimes a little bit difficult to find the point in between how to explain this message. I would like for any of the panelists to give me maybe a short message that puts together the importance of tackling these key groups, but as well the importance of understanding that they are not the problem. I don't know if somebody can put this together for me and Sophie.
Okay, we have several broad questions. Does anyone on the panel?
First of all, I would like to address the gender issue. We have had several press conferences during the week, after each plenary session and other appointed press conferences, in which the gender representation was different. I mean, this press conference does not intend to represent the gender representation during the conference. I can tell you that during the preparation of the conference, ICW, for instance, is one of our partners, and they were very active, and they were equally represented in the conference coordinating committee as well as in the other committees that put together the program. Having said that, let me tell you that this is again a very personal point of view. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I think that the time will come in which we will be mature enough in order to understand that you don't need to be an MSM to speak on behalf of the rights of MSM. You don't need to be a female in order to speak on behalf of the needs of female. Obviously, all groups need to be involved, but I would like to see one day a conference in which a female is speaking about the MSMs, an MSM is speaking about the issues regarding IDUs, etc. Because this would mean that instead of being parts of understanding, we have a common understanding of our problems. And what was the second question?
Anyone else want to speak to this issue? Luis?
I want to answer you a little bit, because try to work with key populations, and it sounds that sometimes you're losing the general audience or the general public. First of all, there are different messages, different language, and sometimes we're really more close for some communities. We believe a lot in peer education, for example, that helps a lot. For example, you're working between women, a woman can really work with another one. But also, because in these groups it's more concentrated, because of stigma, discrimination, and vulnerability, social vulnerabilities that you cannot see when you're working in with the general population. When you look general population, every general audience is built by little pieces. MSM, a woman, a transgender, a lesbian, that are part of that. So we are just trying to arrive all of them from the perspective of finding them as a key population. Yeah?
I just want to add briefly to this comment that certainly we need different types of messages for different populations, as has been said. And your question is very welcome, because we need targeted intervention for targeted populations, but at the same time address the general population in order not to mislead and send a message that, okay, this is a problem of commercial sex workers, ID, intravenous drug users, and NSMs. So I couldn't agree more with your question.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate you being here and asking your questions, and look forward to seeing you at the closing ceremony. Thank you very much to all our panelists.
Yeah.